Hi, I'm Rob Nadelson, and welcome to the Defending the Constitution series of essays. Many people characterize the U.S. Constitution as vague or filled with broad generalities. Others identify it as a source of our basic rights. Actually, it's neither of those things. Key to understanding the Constitution is to know that it's a very well-drafted, fairly precise document granting fiduciary powers, and that it follows 18th century customs for such documents. It was designed to put into practice the broad principles of the Declaration of Independence to the extent politically feasible. Much of the Constitution is made up of lists of powers granted by the people to persons and groups. Other components are analogous to terms you might find in complex 18th century documents creating fiduciary relationships. Statutes conferring authority, instruments creating trusts or agency relationships, and charters erecting corporations. The first thing most people notice when they pick up the Constitution is its majestic preamble. It explains why we the people do ordain and establish this Constitution. Preambles were common in 18th century legal instruments. Preambles did not have the force of law. They were for background information only. Preambles remain common in legal documents today. We often call them whereas clauses. Any power-granting document must explain who is receiving authority and the conditions under which they may exercise it. Hence, the Constitution outlines the structure of the new federal government: Congress, the President, and the courts. A power-granting document also limits authority. Limits come in three forms. First, those receiving power receive only the power the document lists. If I authorize my broker to sell stock, it follows that I'm not authorizing him or her to sell my house. Second, a document may flatly prohibit certain actions and put conditions on others. The same agreement that authorizes my stockbroker to sell stock may prohibit him or her from selling below a certain price. And thirdly, documents granting powers are limited in the authority they grant because the law of fiduciary or trust relationships imposes additional restrictions on anyone exercising power on behalf of another. The Constitution contains many specific limits. For example, it bans ex post facto laws and taxes on exports, even when they might seem warranted. The Constitution bans restrictions on free speech, on restrictions on freedom of religion, and on the right to keep and bear arms. Some of these limits are designed to ensure good and responsive government. Others are included to further justice. Still others are there to protect natural rights. During the 18th century, a complex power-granting document might include terms telling the reader how to interpret it. Such terms are called rules of construction. Rules of construction don't change the document's meaning. They're guides to understanding. For example, the Necessary and Proper Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, the Necessary and Proper Clause tells us to read Congress's enumerated powers to include lesser authority of the kind that lawyers call incidental authority. Other rules of construction include the Supremacy Clause of Article 6 and the 9th and 10th Amendments. Power-granting documents sometimes alter pre-existing arrangements to make the overall system work better. If I give my broker authority to sell stock on certain terms, I might have to revoke that authority. I might have to revoke authority I've given to others. The Constitution similarly adjusts some pre-existing relationships. It requires each state to have a Republican form of government. It requires states to respect the official proceedings of other states. It requires them to honor certain, quote, privileges and immunities of Americans who live in other states, and so forth. The core of the document consists of the Constitution's listed or enumerated powers. Some people with superficial knowledge of the Constitution claim that all the enumerated powers are in the congressional list in Article 1, Section 8. That's not right. Other congressional powers are scattered throughout the document. In addition, Article 2 lists enumerated powers of the president, Article 3 lists powers of the courts, and Article 5 enumerates powers exercised in the amendment process. The Constitution doesn't always use obvious language to confer authority. Some grants of power are latent or hidden in other kinds of phrasing. When the Constitution obligates the United States to pay pre-existing debts or to guarantee to each state a Republican form of government, it thereby grants authority to the U.S. government to do those things. When the Constitution obligates the president to enforce the laws, it thereby gives him the ability to do so. The powers granted by the Constitution are extensive, but as stated earlier, they're also limited. If the Constitution doesn't grant an enumerated power to an officer or agency, then the officer and agency does not have it. I found that many people find this difficult to grasp. But the fact is that the Constitution doesn't authorize the federal government to be a national health agency or a school board or a police department. Finally, here's an important but widely overlooked feature. The document doesn't grant power only to federal officials. It also confers power on persons and entities who aren't part of the U.S. government at all. Thus, the Constitution entrusts states with regulating congressional elections and choosing presidential electors. It empowers those electors to select the president and vice president. It authorizes governors to call elections to fill congressional vacancies, and in some cases to fill those vacancies temporarily. It prescribes roles in the amendment process for state legislatures, state conventions, and a federal proposing convention. All of these entities and persons receive authority in such matters from the Constitution. Moreover, when individuals serve on federal juries or vote in federal elections, they aren't exercising natural rights. They're executing powers given to them by the Constitution. Of course, those powers often are crucial for protecting natural rights. The courts say that when people exercise authority by virtue of the Constitution, they're performing federal functions. Knowing that the Constitution is basically an 18th century document granting fiduciary powers doesn't minimize its significance or the inspiration of those who wrote it, but it's a very good step toward a real understanding of the document. I'm Rob Nadelson. Thanks for listening.